Good to see you, Peter. Peter's here. All the women are glad because they're going to get their hair done. Acts 16. Okay, am I on? So we'll have to edit out the whole Peter and the hair thing. Oh, okay. Acts chapter 16, we'll finish it today, and we'll go partway into chapter 17. Acts, what day is this? Is this Sunday? Okay. Yeah, Wednesday is Acts. By the way, pick up the CD if you were not here the last Wednesday. Wednesdays are so important in Acts because the foundations of the church are there. And a lot of people who come from maybe another church and wonder, why do you do the stuff you do? That's why. Because we've tried to bypass cultural tradition and go all the way back to the beginning when God was still running things and do what he did then. Keep our hearts open to him, and it's a good way to see. Matthew 16. Boy, have I confused the people online right now. We just read through a few things that Jesus said about being a disciple. He said it to all of his committed followers, those who had purposed in their heart to model themselves after him by being with him. And the words that he says, which we will look at today, are not the most popular things that Jesus said. In fact, of all of the things that Jesus said, they're my least favorite things to say to people. Some of them, simply because of the way people react. It does fly directly in the face of the culture that we live in. And I always like to preface, of course, I was thinking, why do you ask me to do this? Why do I have to say stuff to people like this? Because they're not going to like it. They're not going to listen. He said, well, they didn't like it and listened when I said it. Some will. Some people's lives will change. Some will believe me, and some won't. He said, just tell the truth. And let the chips fall where they may. And I know that in my own life, there has been a great transformation that has taken place when I took Jesus at his word. So I'm going to begin reading. Actually, I'll just back up to verse 21. I'll read all the way through the first part of chapter 17, just so we're taking it all in its context. Which is good when you're studying verse by verse like we do. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. You'd think that would stick in your mind, wouldn't you? They forgot. They totally forgot at the right moment. He told them 8 times. So he tells them that the very people they were hoping were going to welcome him as Messiah were actually, in fact, going to persecute him and ultimately put him to death. And Peter, verse 23 or 22, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord. By the way, that's an oxymoron. The Amplified Bible says, God forbid, Lord. The irony of that. Never, Lord, he said. This will not happen to you. And Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. The word means adversary. You are a stumbling block to me. These are all present tense verbs, meaning right now, this moment. Peter, I know 10 minutes ago you were receiving divine inspiration. Right now, you are out to lunch, buddy. Right now, you're in my way. And right now, you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of man. And we talked last week, that is the perfect definition of what it means to be in the flesh. That Christian phrase, being in the flesh, just simply means that your mindset is that of humans and their point of view and not God's. And those often clash with one another. And then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wants to come after me, he must, three requirements, must makes them requirements to be a follower, a disciple. He must, number one, deny himself. Number two, take up his cross. And number three, follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will find it. That I find to be a personal challenge. It's one of those yeah right things until you've done it. When you've done it and you've accepted that challenge, you absolutely have found out it's not an exaggeration. But you have to step over that line before you find out that it's true. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world and yet forfeits his soul? Circle that word, soul. Circle the word, by the way, back up in verse 25, the word life. It's not the normal word for life that's translated in the New Testament. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world yet forfeits his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he'll reward each person according to what he's done. And I tell you the truth, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. What's up with that? Well, 6 or 7 days later, about a week later, chapter 17. I think Luke says 8 days, but Luke, being Greek, measures by the calendar and not by the Jewish definition of a day. So depending on who, whether you're reckoning it from the Jewish point of view or the Greek point of view, it was about a week. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John. Underline that. We'll talk about that a little bit today. I found something very transforming about this. Why these three? Well, because they're special. Yeah, but maybe not in the way you think. So he took Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and he led them up to a high mountain by themselves. The other Gospels say that he went up there to pray, and he took those three with him. And there he was transfigured. Circle that word. I'll give you the Greek word and its definition. He was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun. There's another word for you to circle, the word shone. Interesting, the physics of that word. His face shone like the sun, and his clothing became as white as the light. And just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. And this wasn't an idle chat. The other Gospels say that they were talking about what was about to happen in Jerusalem. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it's good. This is cool, in other words, wowie. It's cool for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And I'm sorry, but inquiring minds want to know, how did he know it was Moses and Elijah? Name tags? Oh, he had pictures of them in his Bible. Sorry, no pictures then. How did he know? Don't know. I'm going to ask him when I get to heaven. While he was still speaking, that means God interrupted him. This is the second time God has had to interrupt him. Amazing to me that God did it twice rather than just smoking him right there. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my Son whom I love, and with him I am well pleased. Listen to him." The emphasis in the Greek text is on the word him. And the verb tense is a continuous action verb. In other words, always be listening to him. Isn't it sad that God had to interrupt Peter to say that? Been there, done that, still alive to talk about it. When the disciples heard this, they fell down on the ground terrified. But Jesus came, I find this so tender, Jesus came and touched them. Get up, he said, don't be afraid. Those are not words of scolding. Those are words of comfort and tenderness. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. And we're not going to get that far today. I doubt that we'll get to verse 9, but I just want to pass something on to you. This is a week after he told them everything that was going to happen to him. Stuff you would think would be memorable. The other Gospels say that right here at this point, on their way down from the mountain. You know what they were talking about? Mark says they were asking each other, I wonder what raised from the dead means. I'm thinking, and he didn't fire them. This is what I find just so encouraging. I mean, how many things can raise from the dead mean? I do find it so remarkable. I am so grateful that Jesus is the way he is. He's had to repeat himself many times with me. I find it so comforting that these are the guys he prayed all night before he picked them. And they most of the time misunderstood what he was doing and his mission. They were hard of hearing. And you know which three were the worst? Peter, James, and John. They were not the heroes. They were the problem children. What does Jesus do with problem disciples? Fire them? Well, no. He keeps them with him. And I think when I first saw that, it was a paradigm shift in my thinking. Because what do I do with the problem followers? I avoid them. Jesus said, oh no, I can trust those other guys. They're okay. You three, come with me. Why? Was he afraid to let him out of his sight? Here's the thing. This is what's transformed me. If Jesus had shoved me away, I'd still be the mess that I was. But when he pulls you closer and he says, you stay with me, he's going to rub off on you. And eventually, you're not the wacko that you used to be by just being around him. And I love that. But that's for later in the study. Let's back up and look at these difficult, but we got to talk about it, terms of what being a disciple is. I remember somebody in this church I was talking to. We were talking about discipleship somewhere, about, it might have been at a men's breakfast. And he was very honest, and I tell you, I appreciate honesty. I hate kissy face, you know, pretending churchy stuff. I hate that. It's not real. He said, I don't know if I want to be a disciple of Jesus, because there's a lot of stuff I don't want to give up. And I thought, well, and if you don't want to, then you can't be a disciple, and so good, at least you're honest. And I want us to see in this passage, Jesus tells us why that our priorities need to change if we want to be a disciple. But I love that he also tells us what the alternative is. And I think it is one of those things about Jesus' words that people don't believe. 6 years ago when I taught this, I was listening to the CD of it, and I talked about coming financial collapse. 6 years ago. Now, I'm not a prophet. I didn't know, but I just know that the world is not stable. There is no such thing as financial security. I don't care who's the president. There is no such thing. The things of this world are not eternal. They are unstable. If I lean on them sooner or later, they will fail. And so what does God say? He says, don't lean on them. Lean on me. I won't fail. You can count on me. And that's the message that Jesus is telling these guys. and telling us if we want to be followers. Let's look at these three requirements. We did look last week. You can pick up the CD if you want the details about the first part of this, but let's look at the, I just briefly touched on them. Deny himself. A man wants to come after me. If your desire is to be a follower, and of course, that's who he was talking to. I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but one of the reasons he had to say this is they had a completely different idea of what it was going to look like down the road. They thought they were going to waltz into Jerusalem. Everybody was going to be glad to see him. The crowds were going to, you know, Jesus was going to be set up in his kingdom, and, you know, one of them was going to be vice president, one was going to be secretary of state, one was going to be homeland security, you know, and they were just going to be in the pink, and, the, you know, we're going to kick the Romans out of there, and everything was going to be wonderful. That's what they thought was going to happen. And eventually that will happen. But there was some other stuff that was going to happen in the meantime. And for them to be prepared for the road ahead, Jesus said, you're going to have a different mindset than you have. Peter, in your flesh, in the spirit, Peter, you know who I am. In the flesh, you don't want anything bad to happen. And he said, you're going to have, that mindset's got to change. You're going to have to not be thinking about your own comfort, or you're not going to make it where I'm going, because he says where I'm going, at least temporarily, isn't going to be easy. And I think the same thing is true if I'm looking for God to just bless my life and, you know, spread rose petals out and bless my finances, blah, 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 and make my life here in this world comfortable. I may be in for a rude awakening, because it's an unstable world. Even though God loves his children and he wants to provide and he will provide and he will bless. He didn't promise that he would bless us with earthly things that would last for eternity. He told us just the opposite of that. That even when he blesses me with earthly things, I need to see that they're temporary. What does it mean to deny himself? The word simply means to disown, to relinquish ownership of your life. We have almost sang it this morning. We sang it last week. A song that says, this life is no longer mine. I will trust in you. That's the statement of a disciple. I don't belong to me anymore. I belong to you. That's where a lot of people draw the line. I've talked to many people in my life who love all of the stuff that Jesus said about loving one another and forgiving. They love that stuff. They don't like this part of it. They don't like the relinquish, abandon self-living. Abandon self-centeredness is the way the Amplified Bible reads. To refocus my priorities from myself to my Creator. So he said, look, if you want to be coming after me, I don't own myself anymore, he says. I only do the things my Father tells me. And if you're going to be where I am, you're going to have to not own yourself anymore. Now, does that mean I don't have an owner? Oh, no. It's even better than that. It means that who does own me is the one who made me. Now, if you don't know God's heart, if you don't know what he's able to do, if you don't know how brilliant his ideas are, how perfect his timing is, how thoroughly engaged he is, surrendering your life to God could seem like hell on earth. I know a lot of people view it that way. I did, growing up in legalism. But he's God. He's, you know, if he beat me up, there'd be nothing left. I would be vaporized, so I guess I have to surrender to him. And my whole thing growing up was, okay, God, I want your will no matter how terrible it is. I don't think that way anymore, because I know him better. And I realize he designed me. He knows the way my life will be best lived. It used to be in our culture, I hate to say it, in fact it's sadder now than it was 6 years ago when I said it. It used to be that our culture, we admired people for their self-denial for the benefit of others. That used to be one of the things that set us apart as a nation. Not true anymore, is it? or less and less true. You hear a story of somebody who does practice self-denial for the benefit of somebody else, and they stand out so much, and some people think they're heroes, and other people think they're idiots. Because our cultural view of living for yourself has shifted so radically. I think that the historical evidence ought to prove to us that what Jesus said is true, but that I'm getting ahead of myself. So to disown your life, to deny yourself, means that you are abandoning self-centeredness. Does it mean you never think about yourself? No, it just means you're not the center of everything anymore. He's the center of your life. To take up his cross is a willful choice. Of course, they didn't know what that was going to look like. The cross, put your little Jewish thinking caps on and go back to that period of time and realize that in a Roman-occupied Palestine, the cross only meant one thing. It was not a piece of jewelry. It was not something to be revered. It was not even a religious symbol. The cross to these people meant two things. It meant pain and it meant shame. When the Romans invented crucifixion, and they were too humane to crucify everyone who deserved death. It was what they saved for the people they wanted to humiliate. So it wasn't just about a gruesome death, it was about humiliation. So Jesus was about to take the pain of the cross and suffer the shame of the cross. And he's got a bunch of guys following him that think, I'm going to follow Jesus, and I'm not going to have to suffer any pain, and I'm not going to have to be ashamed, because Jesus is going to march right into headquarters and set up, and I'm going to be right there with him. Me and Jesus were just like this. And he says, no, that if you want to be with me, not everybody's going to think you're wonderful. It's going to be a shameful thing. And of course, we will see in a month or two that what happened was they all abandoned him. Every stinking one of them. Is that the end of the story? Oh, no. He rose from the dead, and that shifted completely all of their thinking. And he took them back, all but Judas, who I believe, if he had repented, could have been forgiven. But he took his own life before that could happen. So Jesus is saying, what does he mean? Take up your cross. That means that you make a willful choice to identify with Jesus no matter what. Have you ever wimped out when people were bad-mouthing Christians? They do a lot where I live. Have you ever wimped out and kept your mouth shut because you didn't want anybody to think you're a Christian, because you didn't want them to think you were a brainless idiot, or you didn't want them to think you were a holy roller or something else? I have. It was out of embarrassment. And of course, I've always felt horrible afterwards, and when I get a clear view of who Jesus is, and I realize that I made the very best choice anybody could ever make. I certainly made the best choice that I've ever made in my life when I decided to give myself to him. And he's wonderful. And I told you the story. I can't remember if it was last Sunday or last Wednesday. Obviously, I'm getting those confused. About the reason I am a Christian is not because of church people. Church people are a tremendous disappointment to me. I am a Christian for one reason and one reason alone, and that's because of Jesus, who he is. I have disappointed people in my church personhood, as others have disappointed me, but I'm looking at Jesus.